Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. I'm channeling Fred Rogers today.
I see that. Thank you, neighbor.
You want to be my neighbor?
Yeah, of course I do.
How's it going, Eric? How are you?
I'm all right, and I nearly choked on the intro because I didn't have the thing in front of me. I had to rememberize it.
We've only done it like a million times.
And I fucking wrote it, so.
That's very true.
You think I would at least have some idea of what I'm supposed to say?
Well, you know. It's been a week since we said it.
One whole week.
Less than a week, honestly.
Since you looked at me, turned your head to the side and said, I'm angry.
Really?
Wait,
is that where we're at now?
I got nothing, man.
Quoting
the goddamn Canadians.
Canadians. That's the... I mean, honestly. So close to the 4th of July, we're quoting Canadians.
I mean, the 13th of July, that's like the Canadian 4th of July.
they just add numbers arbitrarily.
Yeah.
I thought there...
It's got maple syrup on it, it had some calories.
I don't think they even have an Independence Day. They're not...
They petitioned the British government to be independent.
Oh, okay.
Like, after a couple of hundred years, they politely said, can we please be independent? Sorry.
England went, sure, it's all right.
And then they were like, sorry.
They have to apologize for that.
Yes.
Asking for your own independence.
They apparently don't apologize to all the geese, all the fucking foie gras they eat.
Well, geese are geese?
Got geese eye.
Geese eye are assholes.
Eh,
so it's okay.
I hear
it's
that.
It's okay to torture them.
It's okay to force feed them. It's a form of torture for sure.
Yeah.
Force feed them and then eat their livers.
Okay. With that, I think it's time for checking in.
You're not going to check in with eating someone's liver after force feeding them?
No, I'm not going to check in with liver eating. Checking in is part of the show where Eric and I talk about what we've been up to during the week. It's generally nerdy, because we are nerds. Strange how that works.
It is kind of mysterious.
I'm going to go first this week.
Well, this is a change of pace.
I know.
You have to tell me about all the staring into the corner that you did.
I did not do any staring into the corner this week.
All the counting the particles of dust.
I've been very busy.
You have been very busy.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Well, I mean, busy, quote-unquote. I still have time for video games, so that's not good. I can't be that busy.
Yeah, well, just truly.
I make myself busy and then have time for, like, a video game time.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of video games, first thing I'm checking with is a game called Shovel Knight, which I beat. Finally.
You beat it.
I did beat it. At least I beat it the first time. There's a new game plus I didn't get everything in the first playthrough. So there's other things. There's things I know I didn't collect.
It was just a panic to try and finish it.
Nah, I just was like, I want to see the, I was just kind of going through the story. There is, for those who don't know, Shovel Knight is kind of a throwback retro action platformer. It has like, it combines, like, a million different games, like Mega Man, Castlevania, Super Mario World, in the same ilk, Metroid, to all those classics. And I do not use those classics to to say, to like, to compare it lightly, because it really is a very good game. Mm. It melds all those elements really well together. It has a lot of humor in it. The gameplay is very, very tight. It is very, very difficult, especially in the later levels.
Hmm.
I was getting better at it. And so I kind of peaked, like, my, I was cursing at this game at a few levels. It's just because the platforming is brutal and unforgiving. You are going to face enemies who are just going to hit you. You think you get them, they hit you, and they knock you into a hole and you die. It has a checkpoint system, which is interesting because you can destroy the checkpoints for more money. But every time you die, you also lose money, which is very frustrating when you have like $8,000 and then you leave a level with less money than you started because you died so many times.
That will teach you that'll let you know there's consequences to dying.
Exactly. Don't die because you'll lose all your money. It's like in real life.
Just like in real life.
But yeah, you're a shovel knight. You're basically defeating this. You're going after this enchantress in this Tower of Fate, and she has a whole bunch of these lackey knights that you have to defeat. They're all gimmicks. There's like the treasure knight, who is like basically this underwater submarine knight. There's the specter knight, who's like a spooky ghost knight.
Very much like Mega Man, right?
Yes, very much like Mega Man. And yeah, and the boss fights are actually, once you get to the higher levels, are the easiest parts of the level. The level itself, with all the platforming, is so hard. And you basically save right before every boss fight. So even if you do die, it's not a big deal because you go right there with full health. You can buy tons of additional items. I mean, your main attack is just your shovel. That really, you can upgrade it like with special things, but mostly it's your every other ability is just buying different items. Stuff that shoots fireballs, stuff that makes you invisible for a second, or out of phase for a second, like Kitty Pryde. So you can walk on spikes. Things like you lets you dash through the air, all kinds of stuff. You can go fishing. There's a gigantic fish person who will like reward you with potions if you catch him enough times.
A fish person?
A fish thing. It's not a fish, though.
An indeterminate gender.
It's fish. I don't know. It's like a gigantic fish that talks.
Okay.
It's a fish god, maybe? I guess that's, it's not very specific.
Pacific.
It's very specific about what that is.
Yes.
But
yes. It's got a little bit of that West Coast flavor.
Yes, it does. But it's a lot of fun. It's a very good game. And the soundtrack is so good.
I own a copy myself and have not input the Steam key. Bought it last weekend, in fact.
Yeah, it's SuperCon.
In fact, Amundo. Mmm, SuperCon. Conalicious.
Yeah. It's a solid game. Great game. Definitely go check it out. Go pick it up.
I know I'm excited about it.
Yeah, the difficulty is the thing. Like, I beat it in, I don't know, 5-6 hours.
Hmm.
That's, I don't know. It results will vary because it is really hard at some points.
I will probably, that's one of the reasons I think I haven't really dove into it, is because I'm not so good at these kind of games, honestly. I was terrible at Mega Man. I was good at Metroid. But I think Metroid is more about finding stuff and less about hardcore platforming.
Once you start learning how it works, you get better. I saw that myself. Like about halfway through the game, I'm like, I am doing terribly. Like I died 17 times in one level, and the levels aren't that long. So it's just a couple moments where it's just like, really? That is, you know what you have to do. It's just doing it. It's fun. And there is actual emotional beats in it. It's simply not just, you know, just like a, just play, just for gameplay alone. There is, the story is a little bit interesting and there's some emotional beats that make you want to beat it.
It's good and shovely, huh?
Yeah, exactly. The other thing I want to check in with is something, I don't know if you know about this, Eric.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. I'm just making sure you knew about this.
I seldom listen to it, but it is one of the things that I am subscribed to in my Pocket Casts application.
If that is not a hint enough, I am talking about Still Untitled, The Adam Savage Project, I guess his podcast, he doesn't really run it. He just kind of is there for it.
Well, I'm sure he's the whole draw.
Yeah, I mean, his name is in it, which is, but he does it with the guys he does Tested with, their YouTube channel. And they do a podcast every week with Adam Savage. And I've been burning through the whole backlog of it this week. I just cannot get enough. It's a really wonderful podcast. It's maybe a half hour long, usually. They do a little longer sometimes, but generally they're about half hour. And it's mostly just him talking about, they just pick a topic and talk about it for a week. This week was kitchen gadgets, kitchen stuff, which is why I wanted to bring it up specifically, because I know we've been talking about that a lot.
I guess that's true.
So he talks about what he uses the most in the kitchen. They reference old Alton Brown a lot.
Old Alton.
Yeah, because I think all kitchen nerds basically revere him.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't? It's just really lovely to hear someone who's that smart, who's that successful, talk about his ethos, basically.
The last episode I've listened to, he was talking about Pacific Rim, so I'll tell you about how long ago I listened to it.
I actually listened to that episode, too.
Of course you did.
But yeah, they have a lot of, there's one about his, kitchen gadgets. There's one about just work ethic, which is, I think, really interesting. I'm talking about that, about being tidy, like how he keeps his shop clean and all that stuff.
I think I need to listen to all these. This sounds like my future self, sending me messages through time or something.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is just kind of, and I mean, there's always, I mean, the tangents are sometimes even more interesting than what the show is honestly about, because he just goes on and talks about something that interests him, and he's so enthusiastic about, his hobbies that it's really, really cool to listen to him talk. I don't know how he has such formed thoughts in his head already, just off the cusp, boom.
Mm.
I don't know. But Eric, what have you been up to this week?
I was counting all that dust for one thing.
Dust motes?
Sure.
Check in? Dust motes.
Or dust mites or beard mites.
Ooh, that's not as good.
No, it's not. No, I made it out. Did you know that, not Florida SuperCon, but MetroCon just happened?
Yeah, I've seen things about it on the Tumblr.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. So I checked it out, almost said chucked it out because I'm a silly person. I chucked it out. No, I checked it out. Met some weirdos, looked at some art, and, kind of made a day of it. Actually took my boss there. That was interesting.
Really?
This is the second time that he's done this to me. Like the first time was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. He calls me and he's like, Eric, there's all these weirdos downtown in costumes. And I'm like, okay. He's like, what the hell's going on? Clearly, you know everybody. I mean, it was basically the same phone call again, except he was like, I really want to go. It's like, I'm not going by myself. I'm like, okay, I'll be your ambassador. So we walked around together. We saw the huge line of nerds waiting to get passes. And we were both like, nope. So we just did all the free stuff. You could actually go to Artist Alley.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
not in the dealer room. Why, they were just out in the open.
Then yeah, that's why do you even need to buy a pass?
I don't know. If you want to do panels, if you want to do events.
Wait, is MetroCon is anime only or?
It is
okay.
A quote unquote anime con, but
they just,
it is. Yeah, these things are all just sort of culture cons now. It is more anime centric and you're going to have, more of, those sort of anime kids. It does seem to slant a little bit younger, but there's people into video games and comics and, people cosplaying as whatever that, interests them at the time.
Right.
Lots of Homestuck kids. And I'm pretty sure that's not an anime. There was a whole little enclave of Homestuck kids that they just all sort of congregated at like the bottom of a stairwell, and they were just, I don't even know what the hell was going on. I couldn't stare at it for too long. It was like staring into the sun.
Dance contests.
It was, I hope not.
They just form a circle and they just have Homestuck dance contests.
But that segued. You get it out of your system.
I like that noise. That was a good.
That's good. That's good. That segued. I went to after that the digital masquerade. I feel so silly saying those words together. at Tampa's own the castle.
Okay.
I don't know. I had a good evening of it. They had a bunch of games there, which was interesting. There was a whole room that I had never seen open that they had opened up.
What kind of games?
They had Mario World. They had Mortal Kombat 3 as an arcade cabinet. They had like a Miss Pac-Man. They had like an Invaders cocktail table.
Right.
They had a bunch of them. I can't even remember quite all of them. But
mostly like old school arcade cabinets and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, they did have the Super Mario World on a projector,
okay,
which was fun. And it was a fun night, you know. Met a bunch of nerds and weirdos. So, you know, as you might imagine, this even came up. I threw out the word Venn diagram last night, went over pretty well. But as you can imagine, in the Venn diagram of nerds that go to MetroCon and nerds that also go to the castle, there is intersection.
Really? I don't believe it.
Yeah, who would think?
Right.
Who'd a thunk that?
Who'd a thunk it?
Mm-hmm. That's sort of it, you know?
You went to things and did things with people.
Yes, is that not allowed? Was I supposed to stay at home?
Well, I played video games and listened to podcasts by myself.
I do that too, but it just leads to me crying. I'm also alone!
Well, I wasn't alone. I had Adam Savage in my ear holes.
Oh, man. That's what I want.
That's right. You are. We have confirmed that Eric is the Adam Savage of the pair of us.
Mm-hmm.
When I was listening to the podcast and Adam admitted that he is a hardcore karaoke fan, and he unfortunately really can't do it anymore because he's too famous.
Hmm.
But he says in the mid-90s, he would, he even had like his list of the songs, you know, his go-to songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a Spotify playlist.
Yeah. He said, and he says he would rehearse them beforehand.
I have recorded it with this very microphone.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, there's no denying it now. Eric is Adam Savage, and I guess I'm Jamie by default, even though I don't think I'm really that much like Jamie. But
you're like the guys on Still Untitled.
Yeah, exactly. I'm more like
those guys.
I'm like both of them. I'm just, hey, how's it going?
Yeah. You need to work on getting that mustache to be like 3 feet longer.
I'm working on it. I'm trying.
I don't. It's
hard.
It takes a special kind of genetics to be able to grow a mustache like that
and not destroy it. That's my problem.
Well, also, yeah, to not like constantly get it in your mouth. That's the worst.
It's a tricky balance.
I don't care what you say. That shit's the worst. This, mustache and mouth. That shit sucks.
This week on Mustache Talk, Eric and Robbie talk about keep your mustache out of your mouth. I think with that, I think we're ready for the floppiest part of the week. I think we're ready for weekly floppies.
I keep expecting to hear the noise, but I don't.
Yeah, the noise doesn't play in our earphones, guys, if you're not aware.
If it does, we have to.
Weekly Floppies is the part of the show where Eric and I review the week's books, talk about them, and tell you to buy or do not buy them. And you should generally listen to us. We're pretty smart guys.
Yeah, clearly by that whole exchange, just like, wow, I'm cowed by your great intellect. And your fucking Scooby-Doo noises.
Scooby-Doo noises. They're important. They're important to podcasts.
Yes.
Yeah, this week we are starting off with our indie book of the week. It is Spread number one. Co-created by Justin Jordan and Kyle Strom. Script by Justin Jordan. Art by Kyle Strom. Color by Felipe Sobrero. Letters by Crank! Has an exclamation point, so I have to say it like that.
You have to say it with force.
Yeah. So, this is a horror comic. It is, like this lone wanderer kind of guy. It's cold. I don't know where they are, specifically. It's snowing everywhere.
They're in the ice world in Super Mario.
Yeah. And it looks like, basically, like, kind of like, the Thing.
Asian Wolverine.
Yeah, Asian Wolverine. Wolverine. He's, basically, I guess, like, the Thing has taken over the world. Sort of.
Is that what the Thing is?
I don't know. Kind of. It's kind of like that. Kind of like Last of Us. Kind of like all those, kind of like a zombie movies, except they're biological. It's kind of that, it's, you know, there's different forms of it. There's like runners and flyers and, but it's like just this mass of like monster that takes over people and like can just be like a giant gross red monster thing that can take over different forms, tentacles and teeth and wings and stuff, spikes. But, we're following this wanderer around and he finds this baby who's
like you do,
who's what tears can kill. The awful monster thing. I don't know. It uses something from a saga. I'm fairly certain
the narrator is the baby from the future. And I immediately thought of Saga myself.
Yeah. It's Saga is the comic right now that has made its motif out of that. This is done less artfully, I guess, because the baby kind of, you know, it's Fiona Staples uses her handwriting for that. It's done, you know, it's more.
Yeah.
This is just, you know, straight narrative boxes and all that stuff. But basically this guy, his name is No. He fights off some raiders. He fights off some monsters. We get kind of an idea how this world works a little bit. I liked it well enough.
I like it too. I think that it does seem to be borrowing on an awful lot of things.
Yes.
I also think it doesn't particularly do it too artfully. I enjoy it regardless.
Yes.
You know? Like, it's basically already looks like a lone wolf and cub, you know, samurai monster, monster zombie story.
Right.
I mean, his name is No, and the baby's name is Hope.
No and Hope. No Hope.
Exactly. Like, that is a pretty good illustration that it's a little bit hacky. Yeah. But it's still worth looking at. It still is not a bad book. I mean, you can read it and enjoy it. I think it kind of realizes what it is.
Yes.
You know, it's not trying to set itself up as like, oh, I'm trying to tell some amazing artful story as much as like, this is simple and straightforward. You know, I might be borrowing these things, but you know, whatever. This is what it is. And for what that is, it works really well.
Yeah.
It feels pretty good.
Yeah, I think it owns up to all its influences. It's not saying, it combines a lot of different things. And although none of them, I mean, it's not necessarily original, it is executed well enough
that
it makes it interesting. The art is really nice. It does the horror, the monsters look very, very well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and which I think is a big selling point in this. It makes them awful and ugly.
It's kind of the whole point.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm interested to see how this book progresses when it's not just a whole bunch of snow everywhere. But other than that, I really liked it. I would say I'm a buy on this.
Yeah. Yeah. No reason not to buy this.
So, double buy! Spread number one. Next up. I'm anxious to see what Eric says about this.
I love giving you anxiety.
We're moving over to DC. We're going to the new Suicide Squad, number one.
Amazing how the new Suicide Squad is fucking exactly like the old one.
It's exactly the same book. They added a few new members. Other than that, this book is exactly the same book as it was before.
Yes.
Sean Ryan is writer, Jeremy Roberts on art, Blonde doing colors. Okay. Blonde doing colors. Taylor Esposito doing letters. They add, was it Deathstroke or Deadshot, one or the other? Deathstroke, I guess. They had Deathstroke and Joker's Daughter, which are, Joker's Daughter is a character I do not enjoy. But other than that, this is the same book. I mean, it's the same team for the most part. There's this kind of douchey guy who's now in charge. Really?
That feels very judgmental, Robbie.
How would you describe him, Eric?
That fictional character has feelings.
Does he? Doesn't seem like he does.
I wouldn't describe him at all.
he's a character. He's a guy. He's male. Who's in charge now? The team is going to Russia trying to assassinate somebody. That's how the story goes. I don't know. It's a comic book for sure.
Oh God. You know, it seemed slightly better when it was just people talking like people.
Yes,
And then it got to the scene that the page that starts with Harley running to stab someone.
Joker's
and
daughter.
And they're like, what are you doing, Joker's daughter? Well, I don't know, Deathstroke. Well, Sniper Man. Well, Manta. Well, Harfty Barf.
Yeah,
and everyone's like,
why? And Deadshot,
we're gonna run out of direct address commas, people. It's the real shortage.
I was not aware that Deadshot is Tony Stark.
He fucking looks just like Tony Stark.
I did not know that. Apparently, Deadshot is Tony Stark. Other than that, this is just kind of, I don't know. It's not bad for a first issue. It's not good though. It's not anything. It's just
I'll call it bad.
You'll call it bad? Okay. I wasn't gonna say it's bad, I'll just say it's bland.
I'll call it dumb tarded. It's dumb.
It's very dumb. It is
dumber than hell. I'm trying to find the panel where this guy's like, "Hello, my name is assassinating people."
I don't know.
Sharpshooting is my thing. I mean, it's in the name. Deadshot. That's so fucking stupid.
Sharpshooting is my thing. I mean, it's in the name, Deadshot. Yeah, that's page 7. If you guys keep track at home. This guy is apparently set up like, they are like, you have this, I think the biggest indictment of this book is that Amanda Waller in this book, she's like, you have two of the same people on the team twice. Like Harley Quinn, like they're calling out like the Hal Joker's daughter is already a ripoff of Harley Quinn. And then Deadshot and Deathstroke are the same character. Yeah. I guess it's executed well enough. I don't know.
Whenever the villains aren't talking, I think it feels like a human being wrote it.
Yeah, I don't, it's not, it's just kind of, none of this is necessary. This is all kind of extraneous. I don't know. I never felt any kind of tension or interest in any of these people. Eric, thoughts?
We've looked into it deeply and it is a comic book.
Okay. I think that's enough. I'm gonna do not buy.
I think I love this panel here at the end where the ginger Disney prince that's the villain. He's like, where'd those things come from? And he's like biting his finger. He's got the wet eyes. So what the hell's that? What are you trying to communicate with that panel? That's so stupid. Don't buy this shit.
Okay, that's a double do not buy on New Suicide number 1. DC's blatantly ripping off Marvel's titling now as well.
It's new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah. Next up is Grayson, number 1. This is DC's big release of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Tim Seeley, plot by Tim Seeley and Tom King, art by Mikel Janin, colors by Jeremy Cox, letters by Carlos M. Mangual. So this is spinning out of the events of Forever Evil. Dick Grayson was unmasked publicly, and now he's been like turned into a super spy for this agency that is also was created by Grant Morrison in Batman Inc. And it's like this spy agency that is probably bad, but they try and make themselves look good, and blah 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 blah. We see Dick Grayson fight the Midnighter for a second, and then kidnap this Russian guy who has powers. I am deeply troubled by how I feel about this book.
Really?
Yeah.
Why are you so troubled?
Because the book itself, I didn't mind. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked it.
I liked the book as well. I'm shocked to hear what
the problem is. Like the whole premise behind all this, like at the very end of the book, it has you see the big reveal at the end of this is that Spiral is trying to basically unmask every hero. They don't. Yes. They don't think secret identities are. They don't like them. They want them. They do. They. What does he say? With godhood must come transparency. Power cannot be masked. And the first guy they have on their big computer screen is Batman. And it says, confirmed percentage of match, 89%. In Forever Evil, Dick Grayson was unmasked publicly to the world. Everyone on Earth who's watching television, I suppose, or reads a newspaper, knows that Dick Grayson was Nightwing, and therefore Robin. Dick Grayson was adopted by Bruce Wayne. Publicly, that's public. A billionaire who is one of the most famous people on Earth, adopted someone who is a Robin and Nightwing. That is just a problem.
You see, the thing that you're misunderstanding, Robbie, is you can't be smarter than a 7-year old and read a comic. Apparently,
I guess not. Because this book is very interesting. The action is done very well.
Mm-hmm. I felt like the dialogue and the humor in it is pretty good.
Yeah, it's feels natural. It feels like real people talking. We talked about Suicide Book. It doesn't feel like people don't talk like that. This feels like actual dialogue between actual human beings. And the art's really nice.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, it's very pretty. I like
pretty.
It is pretty.
This page where he's staring at a head in a jar. It's beautiful.
Yeah, appearance of the Midnighter. Thankfully, Midnighter isn't dead. I'm glad about that. Even if I don't know how this version of Midnighter works in DC, but I like the thing between Dick Grayson and his partner. Mm-hmm. How that kind of relationship is building. It's a good first issue. I would suggest buying this first issue. I just don't know. It's just inextricably tied to Forever Evil, which I really don't like. And I'm trying not to make that influence my feelings.
I think you can safely ignore it because I don't know shit about it. And I'm like, this is a comic book. I'm reading it. Hey, it's not bad. I was actually really pleasantly surprised.
Right.
Because I hate almost everything that DC does. And I enjoyed this.
Yes. It's a very interesting book. It's well done. Well executed.
Mm-hmm.
I
had a Russian man with gut lasers.
Yeah, that's pretty dangerous. He shoots Midnighter out of a reactor core or something. Smokestack.
Oh, yeah.
Something like
Chernobyl.
Yeah, something like that. But I'm a buy.
Buy this book.
Buy it. If you're gonna buy a DC book, buy this one. Hopefully it keeps it up. I would be remiss if we didn't. Have you seen the redesign of the Batgirl? Cameron Stewart's redesign on her costume.
You mean the one that everybody is going crazy about?
Yes.
How many? I mean,
I follow the Tumblr that has reblogged every single person.
Well, that's what I'm gonna say. There's probably a sub-Tumblr that's just pictures of Batgirl in the new costume doing selfies.
I think that's the large majority of the Tumblr I follow.
Yeah.
It's actually run by Cameron Stewart, I think, or one of them, one of the creators.
No, people are losing their fucking shit over it, which I kind of don't understand.
I don't know. I think they're just hoping... Cameron Stewart is a well-regarded name in the comics industry. Mm-hmm. And I count myself among those. I like Cameron Stewart. I like his work.
Oh yeah. I mean, it feels like
I think they're just hoping that this Batgirl who's like a very like weirdly regarded figure in comic books. Like she was Oracle for so long, and then they rebooted her, and now she's just Batgirl again, Barbara Gordon. And the book with the original Batgirl run was kind of dark, and I think they're just hoping that it won't be. It will be fun.
Well, honestly, it's one of the reasons if I sound like I'm not reacting terribly well to this, I'm just kind of rolling my eyes at it because I'm like, Yeah, duh. Why didn't you do this a long time ago? Like, it seems so fucking obvious.
I don't know. I'm very hopeful that this series will be very good.
I assume we will never read it.
We probably will read it, and then hopefully we won't be disappointed. Next up, we're going to Marvel. We're going to the 100th anniversary special. It's under 100th there.
I did not know Spider-Man was 100 years old.
I think it's under Marvel, honestly. Marvel 100th anniversary special. No, this is the first in a line of books. Marvel basically giving creators this theme of what will our books like on our 100th anniversary? Like, what will the stories be being told, you know, in 2060, whatever it is? And this is the first of them. It's written by Sean Ryan, who also wrote that Suicide Squad issue, Eric.
That explains so much.
Art is by I'm going to murder this, but Inhyuk Lee.
I think, yeah.
That's close enough. Letters, Clayton Cowles, cover, also, yeah. It's all digital, so he did everything.
I listened to a Neal Stephenson book today where he was describing a Chinese man's name, and he described it as a series of shushing noises. So I think we're just an embarrassment. We can't pronounce those sounds.
No. But this is basically, it's called Great Power, Part 8 of 8, and it's basically presupposing that this is the last issue of this, you know, this run of Spider-Man 100 on their 100th anniversary. Basically, there's a symbiote that is also like can connect to technology. It's like Venom, but with technology powers as well. And this is like a big showdown between the Kingpin and Spider-Man. Kingpin just killed Eddie Brock, and Kingpin has this Venom, this super
It's a hybrid of nanotechnology and the symbiote.
Yes. And I don't know. It's kind of
dumb-tarded.
Yeah. I don't know.
It is dumber than hell. Do you know the way the art is done?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you've spent too much time with Chinese comics,
mm-mm,
but they all look just like this.
Okay.
And it's sort of hard for me to articulate how, because it's pretty abstract. But this looks like, oh, what's his name? Wing Shing Ma. It looks like a Wing Shing Ma comic or something like that. I just love bringing up people that no one knows who the fuck I'm talking about. Makes me feel so smart. But yeah, I don't like it.
Okay, well, there you go. I think
being a Chinese comic doesn't really endear me to it. Even I like Wing Shing Ma, but it doesn't mix well with Spider-Man to me.
I wouldn't really fault the art is not my favorite, but it's certainly not the weakest part of this book.
No, it's good.
The writing is the problem for the most part. I think it's kind of just the dialogue is kind of just the Kingpin is just literally just saying, "I am technology, and now I will run the world." It's like very. It's hey, look at this talk. Look, we're talking about technology.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so you're saying it's too obvious of a metaphor, huh?
Yes, it's a very obvious metaphor, especially 50 years from now. It would not be. This would not be. I don't think technology. I don't think we're going to be able to grasp everything that's available 50 years from now.
Yeah, probably not. This is kind of a flying cars moment.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you that things are going to probably be a lot harder to predict than this. But
no, but I mean, Kingpin in this giant Venom suit looks cool, but yeah, that's about it to me. There's nothing.
You know, we could. I think we are a little too down on this artwork.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, comparing it to Wing Shing Ma, he is certainly a very talented artist. It's just a style that is not my favorite, and I don't think it works well with superhero comics, but he's very talented. It's a lot like Clayton Crane, who you also dislike.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not saying these people aren't good. The art is, like I said, the art is the best thing about this. The story is, I would say, the people are just very... Here, okay, Peter Parker, the first page of this, he says, "No, you killed Eddie." Why would he say that?
People tend to not just exclaim no.
Or they,
I mean, I can't remember the last time that something bad happened and I was like, no.
And Kingpin is just monologuing this entire issue. It's, yeah, I don't mean to be down on this art. The art is the best thing about it, even though I don't really like this style of art. He's certainly not a bad artist. I just, this story just makes it, like, it's like that'll take away all the word panels and it'd probably be a better book. Just make it a silent comic.
Just put it in Chinese.
Even that, yeah, sure.
This book would be much better in Chinese.
Yeah, probably.
I would love to see. God, I would love to see, because the Chinese story writing is very strange. I would love to see a Spider-Man comic written by an actual like Chinese comic writer.
Yeah,
I think it would be weird as hell. But anyway. No.
Yeah, don't. I was kind of interested about this because they've done a lot of really interesting books coming up that are under this 100th anniversary. They have Stoko doing an Avengers book.
Wow.
Which I'm very excited about.
Would you say you're stoked about
it? I am. I'm Stokoed. Stokoed. I can't. I tried.
Don't have an aneurysm.
I tried and it didn't work. But yeah, I'm very interested. I was like, whoa, that sounds really awesome. Maybe this will be really awesome too. It's not really awesome. It looks cool, but it's not very good.
I would just like to point out, I do not know the specific country of origin of this artist. I'm just sort of speaking in general terms here. The guy could be friggin' Korean for all I know, but it's a very Chinese-influenced style.
No, he's from Korea. He's Korean.
Okay, well, it's interesting that his style is not more Japanese, because this is clearly more influenced by Chinese artists. I mean, like when you look at like the hands he draws and the faces and the way he paints things, mm-hmm. it looks just like a Wing Chun Ma book. But I mean, even that, like, what's his name? Amaki? I can't remember the guy's name that does Fist of the North Star. He's got a lot of Chinese influence in him. So, I mean, it's not like it's unheard of for, a Japanese or a Korean person to take a lot of influence from Chinese art.
Yeah. I do not buy.
Yeah. That's a solid do not buy this terrible book.
Double do not buy. Book. It's 100th anniversary special number one, Spider-Man.
Wait another 100 years.
We'll do 200th anniversary, see what it looks like then.
Yep.
Last book of the week. We're coming back to it, Eric. Superior Foes of Spider-Man, number 13.
I know. It was a fucking blast from the past.
Yeah. There's been a couple long breaks of this. The last issue and this issue have come out on a kind of regular schedule, but before then they had a couple fill-in issues, and you know, I don't know what the story is. I know that this book has been theoretically canceled as of issue 15. I have no idea how it's all working, but I still find it delightful.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Yeah. It's good.
Yes.
He's talking to the head of Silvermane.
Yes, he is.
And there's like, he's fucking like cracking wise on him.
And so Silvermane doesn't like Hammerhead. He does not want to go back to Hammerhead.
He makes it sound like Hammerhead like is like in love with him.
Yes.
So I don't know. It's almost impossible not to hear these guys as voices from the Venture Brothers. I mean, we said this, but it's like, it's almost more so in this. Like the guy talking to the severed head, that is such a Venture Brothers joke. And Silvermane in my head sounds just like, he sounds just like an old monarch. You know, that being said, and I don't know that this is going to be a controversy or not, maybe I'm the problem with this. I would absolutely buy a trade of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care about reading it monthly.
You're the problem, Eric. It's you.
I might be the problem.
You're the only person. Yeah. It's all your fault.
I could save this book.
All you had to do was buy it on a weekly basis.
My $4 a month. It's like the Sally Struthers commercials.
Your $4 a month would save this book.
I'm gonna put it through school, give it access to clean water. Let it pet a puppy.
Well, I think that's a very interesting point, and I think that's kind of a, that's kind of a problem with comics in general, is that a lot of these very good books get canceled.
Yeah.
Because they're not necessarily really meant, like, they don't work as well on a monthly schedule, or they take time for people to get attached to them. And, you know, if they're not a big hit right out the gate, especially with a book that's such an oddball like this one is, where it's called Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which is like a joke title. And, it doesn't really market itself very well. Like, unless you've read it, you don't think it's a joke until you've read the book. Then you go, oh, that's what they mean by that title. But if you're reading that title, you don't know what to expect out of it.
I kind of don't understand why Marvel doesn't market more stuff like this, specifically in, and I hate to drop this, the graphic novel format.
Mm-hmm.
Because this one would lend itself perfectly to it. You know, two books of, I don't know, I can't math. What, 7 and 6? No, 15 is not that. It's be,
might be
seven,
three.
7 and 8, or 3 books sounds probably better, because it's almost 16.
But they're doing, I think they're, the second trade of this is just going to be mega-sized trade. The first trade I have is, I think, the first 6 issues. Then everything up to 15 is going to be collected in second book.
Yeah.
But I don't, it's just, it, I don't know. I've purchased this weekly, and I got the first trade. I certainly really enjoy it, but it's just an odd, they have to market it different. I don't know if they didn't market it correctly. I think that's the problem, because people who like Hawkeye would like this. It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's good. It's just, I don't know.
No, it's an excellent book. It's hilarious. It's fun.
Yeah, it's
I mean, I own a whole bunch of the first couple, the first 6 probably. I think I need to buy the book, the trade. I mean, I want all of them. They're good.
Yes, I don't know. I don't.
It's well written. It's funny. It's a good team. The art works with it really well.
Yeah, Steve Lieber's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Nah.
Yeah. No, it's really good, and it's, you should go buy this book, and maybe if, like, I'm sure if 50,000 people buy this book in the last few issues, they'll revive it. That's all it'll take.
I don't think we're gonna save it.
Probably not. But still, buy Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 13.
Yeah.
It's really good. Buy all of them. Go back and get the lot. It's really good. Double buy.
Double buy!
Kim always hates it when I yell.
Who's Kim? You're looking around. She's a mouse pad. She's a computer monitor. She's a computer. She's a desk.
She's an imaginary person inside my head.
Oh, that's weird.
I have problems.
That's really disturbing.
Am I bothering you?
Yeah,
okay,
a little bit.
Okay.
Does this Kim person have tentacles or a strange number of eyeballs?
No, she just is a person.
She just is a person.
Person inside my head, at least.
Okay. Weird.
Yeah.
Solipsism.
Yeah, exactly. Other books out this week. New Captain Marvel. New Detective Comics. Both good. There's a new Adventure Time spinoff book called Banana Guard Academy, drawn by Matt Rupert. So I'd suggest that. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, Matty.
But with that, bring us to the end of Weekly Floppies. It's a sad, sad time.
Because
Then it's the longest time until the next time for Weekly Floppies.
I thought you said we were never going to do it again. I thought that's what that meant.
No.
That's why you're so sad.
No, not until next week. I just, I'm not very patient.
Okay.
Okay. Next,
it's like waiting for Christmas, right?
Yeah, except it's only, it happens once a week, so it's not honestly that bad.
Sounds good. Sounds... That's why I'm going. That's why I'm going broke. Christmas is every week.
I know you, and you spend less money than I do. Okay. I've started budgeting a little bit. It's
yeah.
There's only so much money to go around, folks.
We're hopeless.
Yeah. Next up is Murder Boy Book Club.
Almost, Murder Boy Book Club.
I can't talk, apparently. Nerd Boy Book Club.
Now, that's when you insert the noise.
Yes.
When you say it correctly.
Yes. Nerd Boy Book Club is the section of the show where Eric and I will assign a book ahead of time to you guys so you can read along with us and we'll talk about it. It's a lot of fun. This week, we are embarking on a gigantic retrospective of The Walking Dead, the most... probably one of the most popular comics franchises there is. We're going to be doing four trades a week until we catch up to number... They have 20 volumes out. I think there's 21 volumes out. We're going to go up to number 20. I think that will give us a good grasp on the series as a whole.
The takeaway is there are zombies.
Yeah.
And people are mean.
The series... Like, with the success of the television show... I don't think, I mean, they have the television show planned for like 10, 11, 12 seasons. And they're on season 5 now, I think they just finished, 4 or 5. I don't think this comic is going anywhere. This comic will probably run forever. It's at, you know, they're almost at 130 now of issues.
Now, when you say that, you say you don't think it's going anywhere, or do you don't think it's going away?
Both.
Listen to that hard-hitting criticism.
I've read a lot further than Eric has in this, but we'll get to that when we get to that. Right now, we are reading volumes 1 through 4. It's issues 1 through 24. It's written by Robert Kirkman.
Robert the Kirkman.
First trade, the first volume is Tony Moore on art, but he left after issue 6 or 7, and after that, Charlie Adler took over, right?
Much to the detriment of the book, in my opinion. Tony Moore is like Steve Dillon, but I like him.
I don't
dislike Steve Dillon.
No.
He just draws really ugly people.
He does draw really ugly people. I'm not necessarily saying that I don't necessarily mind the ugly people, because this is kind of, that's this book is ugly in a certain way. It's the worst.
I think they're appealing, you know, they have an appeal.
Yes.
I don't know. I am a fan of the Tony Moore artwork.
Okay.
I thoroughly enjoy it.
We should read Fear Agent then, because he did that with Rick Remender.
Well, we have a long time to go
until
we can read it.
Well, we have eternity, actually, Eric, so.
Because it'll just go on forever.
Yeah. But you said you've only read the first two trades of this before, right?
I thought I had only read the first two trades. As it turns out, I had only read the first one.
Okay, then.
Because I thought Tony Moore did all the artwork for this, and I was shocked after the first one that it was a stark difference, and I didn't know who the fuck all the characters were. Like, no one looks the same anymore.
Yeah, you have to kind of get used to the new art style.
Yeah.
Although, now that the fact that that Adler has done pretty much everything after that,
it hangs together.
Yes.
You know, people are introduced solely in this new art style, and I just think that it's a little too stark and the characters aren't as identifiable. And it certainly improves a lot. You know, when you're steeped in it for a while, it works a lot better. You know, by the 20s, you know, issue 20 towards the end of, trade 4, it's really starting to work.
Yeah, I mean, for those who aren't familiar with the story of The Walking Dead, which is, I assume, no one, but, it's the zombie story to end all zombie stories, to quote. I mean, it's every zombie trope.
Yeah.
Kind of all mashed together. I mean, there's a guy, the main character, wakes up in a coma in his hometown. The very first issue starts off with him he's a cop, he gets shot. And he goes to the hospital, he wakes up in a coma, everyone's gone, there's zombies everywhere, he doesn't know what to do. He goes to Atlanta, which is the closest big city, hopefully to find his family. He finds a city full of zombies, and just happens to get rescued by this guy who takes him to their little camp outside of the city, and his wife and son are there. Then there, it's basically the rest of the story is them kind of trying to survive. They meet, dealing with dynamics of new people, dealing with this situation where civilization has kind of collapsed. There's no more real law and order. The zombies are an omnipresent threat. I've mentioned that, I've said this before to people, because, you know, whenever I tell people that I like comics, they're like, oh, do you watch The Walking Dead? I'm like, no, I don't really watch it much. I watched the first season, I think. But the zombies aren't necessarily like, the zombies are like the environment in this.
Yeah.
They're not, it's not like they're, it's not what really the story is focused on. It's really just that they're like, it's like living in the desert. You just kind of have to take it as a threat and survive, like work around it.
It's just like Dune.
Make your knife chip and shatter.
Yes, that's right, Grimy.
Yeah, Grimy. Yeah, his name's Rick Grimes. Which yep. just makes me, yeah, The Simpsons. Yeah.
Grimy.
But yeah, there's, I mean, it, they explore around, they find new people who they kind of absorb into their party. They find, a, you know, a farm with new people. They find a prison. That's the prison is really, I think, where the main focus of the story really kind of gets develops. They focus on it because they're stuck in this one place for a while, and you get to see everyone kind of this cauldron of,
it's all these different personalities, yeah, in there. It's like a pressure cooker.
There you go. That's what I was looking for. Pressure cooker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really, it reminds me, it's a strange thing because both of these shows are currently running right now and are both based on popular works of fiction that aren't television, but Game of Thrones. The fact that if you're a good person, you're probably yes. going to die. Like, it doesn't pay to be good. It pays to be smart and ruthless.
This is a pretty reoccurring meme in a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You know, being punished for morality. And it, I mean, is this really sort of how people think and feel? I don't particularly think that, but they just say that, you know, science fiction and fiction, even fiction to begin with, mm-hmm. is it's just sort of a reflection of how people feel about themselves in the times that we live in, and
right.
sort of what we're afraid of.
Right.
The whole like, zombies are us sort of afraid of our own savage nature, and that's really absolutely what this story is about.
Yes,
because kind of what's scarier about this is the way these people are interacting in this terrible environment and how they just all are basically starting to kill each other
yeah.
and reacting to terrible things happening. Zombies about human beings being afraid of each other.
Yeah.
All the dystopian futures and how everyone is sort of scared of some huge threat, huge invisible threat looming over our heads that's going to destroy us all. I don't know. It's interesting the way these things happen. They talked about this, some NPR show about how this has shifted. Like back in the 50s, it was all about, you know, like nuclear irradiated things because everyone was terrified of nuclear power and nuclear bombs. And now we're scared of ourselves.
Yep. Pretty much. It's about, you know, it's paranoia mm-hmm. and fear of something from within. Which is kind of, you see that in several ways in this book. I mean, the zombies is, you know, fear of infection, fear of being bitten, and then fear mm-hmm. of someone inside your group that you don't know them well enough to know if they're, or even if you do know them well enough that they're going to snap, that something that you didn't see before is suddenly becomes present because of this fear and this stress. I guess I've read this before and I obviously enjoyed it. Do you enjoy reading this, Eric?
I think it's pretty good. It's honestly, it's kind of not my favorite book. When I first read the first trade, I remember just coming away and thinking it was amazing. But I guess at this point, I'm just kind of zombied out.
That's the next question I was going to ask is yeah. how much of it is you think just this thing that zombies,
they're just everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, this started over a decade ago. So
Jesus Christ, that's terrifying to think
yeah,
about.
Yeah, so it's, it wasn't, this is part of that first wave of
yeah.
really popular zombie things.
10 years of too much zombies.
I think John Hodgman is recently, I think in one of YouTube, his interview with Paul F. Tompkins, he said, as a book publisher, he kind of came to the point that zombies and vampires are tropes that do not die, literally and figuratively.
What? What?
Exactly. But yeah, it's really focusing on, after a while, the zombies are just kind of background noise. A thing you have to be afraid of, but there's not, a zombie in itself is not interesting. Like, there's only so many things like, oh, it's my loved one, and now it's a zombie.
Yeah, and that happens over and over. And I think the only thing interesting that they did with it was how the zombie virus has sort of become airborne, and they're all infected, and as they die, they just come back, just like the walkers do in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you actually were bitten. If you die, if you get bitten, the virus will kill you, and then you become a zombie. Yes. But if you die, you become a zombie regardless.
Yes.
Yes. Which is, there's a few little interesting bits. The farmer who hasn't killed any zombies because he thinks that maybe we can cure them.
Yeah, there's some cure out there.
And what,
that they're still human somehow.
Yeah, which is him just kind of
wishful thinking.
Yeah, because his son is one of them. He doesn't want his son to be
and
dead
then
forever.
And then all of his family dies.
Every single one of them.
Spoilers.
Well, obviously spoilers.
This guy that we spoiled.
Yeah.
All of his family dies, and that's a spoiler too.
And that's another, this book just, like Game of Thrones, I'm going to make a comparison again, is that it just puts people through the ringer. It just, what can this person take? How much can this person, this character, live with before it's just too much? Like, push people till they break, push characters until they break. And that's, I think, part of the charm in this series and part of the charm of Game of Thrones, too. I think that's why people like these series so much, is that no one is safe. That you can't get attached to any character because any one of them could die.
That is kind of a depressing thing to take away from this, that we're looking at these stories and saying, don't get attached to people, and people are terrifying.
It really is. It's very.
Is that really what's going through our heads?
I don't know if it's. I don't think it's conscious. I think it's honestly a reaction to a lot of fiction being precious with their characters.
Yeah.
And I'm
sure about that. I'm just sort of looking at it from sort of a, you know, what am I trying to say? Sort of a macro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of taking a step back and saying, here's all these things that do it. But certainly these things do come in waves. This is a reaction to this. You know, I feel you on that for sure.
And Game of Thrones like this has been around for a long time.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is a lot old. Wasn't it like the late 90s he wrote the first book? Am I off base with that?
I don't know. Honestly, I can't tell you specifically. I can find out, though.
For some reason, I want to say 96 or 99.
1996, first.
Hot damn.
Game of Thrones was 96. So yeah, but it's really reached kind of a popular wave with the television show and all that.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that is part of its charm, is the fact that no characters are precious. They're all can be maimed, destroyed, killed. No one is immune. And I think that feeling of surprise and tension keeps people glued. I think that's what really this book is really good at. I think what it's best at, honestly, is landing really dramatic beats at the end of issues.
So it's Lost.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Except it's not as, doesn't have as many ridiculous things that they never answer.
Yes.
There's not a lot of questions in this book. It's just kind of like people.
Every 108 minutes, you have to input a code into a zombie.
And I think that's why this book worked so well as a comic book, even before it was a television show. And like we were talking about that earlier, Spirit Foes of Spider-Man, this book, every issue really ends on something like, I need to know what happens next.
It almost seems like it was written to be a television show in that, right? But I mean, it's not like he wasn't writing to the format.
No, it's, well, I mean, it's they're both serialized. I mean,
it can be comparable in terms of some parts of it to storytelling. I get it.
Yeah, it's really, really good at propelling you to the next issue. Like, I need to know what happened. What happens after this? Like, the last page of an issue is just someone getting punched in the face, like a fight starting, or mm-hmm. someone announcing something dramatically. And it's really good at propelling you forward. It makes you want to read the next issue. Did it read quickly for you, Eric?
Yeah, it absolutely did.
Yeah, it reads fast.
4 books. I got through them in a couple of hours, honestly.
Yeah, it's just boom, boom, boom. You just keep going because it's propelling you forward.
Yeah, absolutely it does.
And it's successful because of that. I just picked the kind of the 4 volume subsections because it worked out for 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Kind of like Sandman.
Math.
But that 24th issue is kind of a...
It's a nice sort of punctuation.
On this section.
Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of on the nose. More than kind of. It is very on the nose. But that speech he says, Rick says near the end, is really, really well written. And it really typifies this, I don't know, this genre, if you want to call it that. Explains, I think it really does exemplify him as a character. Where he says, I will do anything for us to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why he's the quote-unquote hero, the main character of this book. And he's the guy who will do anything to survive. He kills a guy who was threatening, you know, their safety in this prison. They feel safe. He wants to feel safe with his people in this prison because it's walled off and, you know, it's relatively secure. Someone is threatening that. And when he has an opportunity, he kills him. No trial. No arguments.
Yeah.
Just boom, shot him in the head. Well, he wasn't looking.
It's very much like, and it's a very human thing, that he is doing these things for survival and he's trying to sort of twist his morality around it.
Right.
Like he's very much trying to justify murdering this guy who's just like, fuck you, you know, when your back is turned, I'm going to get you. So preemptive strike.
Right.
I imagine it's going to be a lot of those sort of tough choices and them trying to live with it. I imagine that's just sort of going to be the reoccurring theme between now and issue 300 billion.
Yeah, and it certainly pops up over and over again. I think the issue, and basically survival and what will you do to survive. And I kind of don't like the fact that they have this whole, you know, double page splash of him shouting, we are the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
That the thing with like him just saying it to end the issue, I think is much more impactful is than him screaming it. But, I think that it really nails what this whole series is about, is what will you do to survive? If they're surrounded the dead, like he even talks about, they're surrounded by the dead. And it really is an ever-present threat. It's their environment. It's where they live now. And what will you do to not be dead? What will you do to survive? Do you think the humor works in this, Eric?
Doesn't really stand out to me too much.
Yeah, I mean, I would call it humor because it's not like it's, hey, this is funny. Mm-hmm. It's more just light moments. People trying to be, you know, it's hard to call them light moments when you're like in the next 3 pages, people are getting like ripped apart.
Their guts are being torn out.
Yes.
No, I mean, I think there were maybe some gags or things that, you know, something Carl did or something like that. But I definitely do not have a recollection of this as being laugh out loud funny.
No, I didn't really mean it in that way. But
do you think that it is appropriate? Like, what are you asking me?
No, I'm just curious if, like, I would see the main issue. It's just that it's so dark that it just is difficult to continue
reading.
Yeah, that
it weighs on you too much.
Yeah. I would say, is it too so dark that you don't want to read anymore?
after, ask me that again at 48.
Okay.
At book, or at
we can,
yeah,
we,
issue 48.
We can continue to check in.
I think that over time, if it's exactly like this, and I don't really see it arcing off differently, I could see getting very sick of it.
Okay.
That it's just the same sort of, like, trying to, like, make me tighten up, and it's not varied.
Do you find the characters likable? I should say that.
I find them compelling.
Right.
Some of them are still pretty flat.
Well, I mean, there's, like, they have so many characters. Even after people die, there's still tons of characters.
Exactly. There's a lot of them, and it's hard to get them these moments where they can really let some character show through. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in Tyrese and the woman that sort of walked up with a katana.
Michonne?
What was her name?
Michonne.
Yeah. I'm interested to see where she goes. It's
She's pretty interesting.
I imagine so. Like, it's always good to be cautious of, like, the stoic badass walking up, but she's already thrown a monkey wrench into some things. So I'm interested to see how it's going to shake out. Really, a lot of them are just sort of just barely introduced at this point. You know?
Yes.
I think that really, starting from this point, hopefully we'll see more of these characters in these tough situations and, you know, see some character growth and get to understand a little bit more about them, because really it's almost all set up at this point.
It really, I mean, in the long terms of the series, the characters that make it, you know, dozens of issues that Kirkman actually allows you to get attached to because they don't die right away or within five issues of their debut.
Yeah.
Those are the ones you kind of get some kind of attachment to, an idea of what they are. And I think, that's really what the story turns around into, these people, what you see in the people who survive. Mm-hmm. I think, and that, again, we'll see as we go further. I do want to, we mentioned the art, earlier. Do you think this works well, you know, without the colors?
I think it makes it difficult, or more difficult, to tell who the characters are.
Mm-hmm.
Like Grimes, especially when he's got his beard with no color, and they're all wearing, like, identical fucking jumpsuits by the end.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to tell him apart from the other bearded dude, so then they had to kill him. I mean, everyone's just going to look identical. It's without, you know, color and different costumes, it just looks a lot very samey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and for the story, it makes a lot of sense, but for storytelling, it's a bit rough.
Right.
You know, it's hard to identify one character from the other. I mean, the two blonde women that I forget, there's two different ones.
Yeah, Lori and I forget the other one's name. She's less.
I mean,
she's exactly the one that tries to kill herself. The things that happen to them.
Yeah, exactly. And
Carol.
Yeah, and that's,
Lori is Rick's wife. Carol was dating Tyrese, and then
that's correct.
Michonne came around, and blah, things happened. Blah blah.
And that to me is why the Tony Moore artwork works so much better. The characters are much more identifiable. It's easier to say, well, this is this person, this is this person. It tells the story a lot better that way. It's very mushy when the other artist takes over, and it improves somewhat, but I still don't think that it's not as good for telling a story, and it troubles me. Everyone just looks too similar, and the lack of color just really adds to that.
Okay. I think that there's a natural ebb and flow to at least the characters. And so I think they kind of figure out to a point, they go, well, we can have so many of these people that look like this, Once then you start seeing it, they start introducing characters that look, you know, different, or they start getting developing things like that.
But yeah, I think they probably figure these things out as they go along.
Yeah,
better, or people were complaining about it. I don't know who the fuck who is. So, you know, it's just kind of a thing that is not terribly obvious, that you don't want all your characters to look the same because someone's not going to know who they are.
Yeah.
Like, I think they tell writers not to have characters with a lot of names that start with the same letter.
Right. But when you have 30 of them,
yes,
it starts getting difficult. Yeah.
Because that's more than there are letters.
That's true. Start making up letters.
Mm-hmm. My name starts with an interrobang. My name starts with a hashtag.
Hashtag.
I'm hashtag Eric.
He must be really difficult to track down on Twitter.
Probably so.
Anything else you want to touch on in this one, Eric? Well, I think that's it. I think we had it. It's a good overview of the series and a good look at the first four trades. It's really still really in the kind of this mode of introduction about and kind of focusing in on what this series really is about. The next four, I'm really interested to read because I think it really gets into the nitty gritty. You get introduction of the Governor, which is kind of this nefarious figure in The Walking Dead. So getting to meet him will be very interesting and see how they interact. I know Eric's excited. I can hear it.
I'm so excited to meet the Governator.
The Governator. It's a different governor. With that, I think we'll bring Nerd Boy Book Club to a close. We do have one more segment this week. It's Eric's favorite. It's Eric's favorite segment.
What's happening? Oh God!
It's we call it the Brian Lee O'Malley Tweet Quiz.
We call it.
We call it that.
I don't call it that.
What do you call it, Eric?
I call it torture.
In this segment, I will quiz Eric on Brian Lee O'Malley's Twitter feed, basically. I will take three tweets he tweeted this week. I will write one in that style, mix them up, read them off to Eric, and he has to guess which one I wrote, which one does not belong. And he loves doing this.
I adore it. The same way I adore smashing my head with a brick.
So a lot?
A total lot.
Total lot. For those who don't know, Brian Lee O'Malley is a writer and artist of Scott Pilgrim. And
his Twitter feed is full of excellent content.
Yes. And his seconds is just coming out next week. His much, much anticipated follow-up. Are you ready, Eric?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Okay, number one. I am Fight Club, and I just tweet all day while Tyler Durden does my graphic novels at night. Number two. Guess what I'm eating? It rhymes with goat bees. Number three, I'm like a puppet controlled by a ghost. Number four, trying to categorize my work is like trying to categorize pizza. I'll read them one more time for Eric's benefit and the audience's. One, I am Fight Club and I just tweet all day while Tyler Durden does my graphic novels at night. Number two, guess what I'm eating? It rhymes with goat bees. Number three, I'm like a puppet controlled by a ghost. And number four, trying to categorize my work is like trying to categorize pizza. How's it going over there, buddy?
I think my brain just threw up. Jesus Christ.
What are you thinking?
I am thinking. Give me some time.
Well, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking I want to go categorize some pizza into the pizza that I want to eat and the pizza that I can't eat.
Okay. Having trouble?
I am. These are all the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Excellent.
Pizza.
Is that your final answer?
Pizza, final answer.
Ding, 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 ding! You got it right!
I wanted to pick goat bees just because that cracks me the fuck up, but I was getting the pizza vibe.
Pizza vibe?
Pizza vibe. It's like Pizza Dog, except not as good.
No. But what did that make you like? I think you're back at 25% again?
Probably. I mean...
Or you're like 4 for 12, I think, kind of at this point.
Yeah.
Or 4 for 11, one or the other.
Something. Well, that would be better than 25.
It would be. I'm just not sure which one it is. I don't remember.
It doesn't. Well, we do have this on record.
We just have to
dig
through the archives.
I don't. I'm not going to do that to keep score of this thing that I despise.
I think you're 4 for 12. I think that's right. It's you're back at 25%. You're right back at the statistical mean.
Yep.
So Eric's successful. He gets nothing for that.
I get an only press, no prize.
Yep, exactly. So with that, I think that'll bring us to a close.
Close.
We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes. Search for us there. Please, if you like us, leave us reviews. Subscribe to us. It really helps us get more people. We really appreciate it. We're on Twitter at HBC Hour. We're on Tumblr, Handsome Boys Comics Hour. We're on Stitcher. Like us there. Subscribe to us there. Also, it also helps us get more listeners. You can find me on Twitter at MixmasterCereal. That's MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can check out my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. You can see most of the things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet at me. I am at Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R, Bad Example.
So until next time, friends, have a good one.
Rock and roll.